Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM or to the podcast at lava1053.com or at koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Today, we are talking lava again, first with an update from Hawaiian Volcano Observatory scientist in charge, Tina Neal, not just about the current activity, but about what she's finding remarkable and about some of the new instrumentation being used. We also talk with Lorna Yaita and Janet Coney of Kilauea Lodge and with Emily Cady of Volcano Arts Center about the impact on businesses in Volcano Village. Let's get to our first conversation. I'm here with Tina Neal. Tina is the scientist in charge at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. And Tina, understanding this is a really tragic and sad time for so many people who are losing their homes and just a really tragic and sad time for the island because the island geography is changing so drastically. I'm curious about this as a geologic event. This has to be an amazing event for you scientists at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. And putting aside the sadness and the tragedy, I'm curious what you scientists are finding particularly unusual or amazing or even exciting about this eruption. And I say this eruption, but I think it's two eruptions, and maybe you should explain that first.
Right. Well, you're absolutely correct. Against the backdrop of the loss and imposition and the destruction and disruption of lives, which is really intense. The scientists responding from the USGS, the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, and our university partners are all working very hard to extract knowledge from this amazing sequence of events. It really is a complex event storm, if you will. We have two eruptions, one in the Lower East Rift Zone and one in the Kilauea Summit area. Threw in a magnitude 6.9 earthquake, had a massive intrusion to feed the Lower East Rift Zone eruption, so a big transfer of magma within the plumbing system of Kilauea. All these things together, any one of them would be a fabulous object of study for a long time. The fact that they're occurring in combination makes it even more challenging and exciting in terms of if we can crack the nut of what is happening at the volcano, I think we're going to make a quantum leap in our understanding of how Kilauea works and by analogy maybe how other volcanoes work.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about how Kilauea works for many people who've been on the island for, let's say, even since 1955 or 60, when some of the last major eruptions in populated areas happened. Kilauea volcano has been sort of a, I won't say static. I mean, it's been there, it's had some changes, but it's just been something that has been a part of life, but not a drastically altering part of life as it is now. So tell us about what is particularly unusual about this.
Well, without telling the whole story, the fact that we had an ongoing eruption in the Middle East Rift Zone that was entering its 35th year, a lava lake, the largest lava lake on the planet up in the summit region, and we knew those were hydraulically connected based on a lot of lines of evidence. And then in late April, when the Middle East Rift Zone vent collapsed out of sight into the bowels of the Middle East Rift Zone, we also at the same time saw a surge of magma moving down into the Lower East Rift Zone, and we tracked that using earthquakes and ground deformation in a spectacular fashion. It was seen from space using radar imagery, and so that event in and of itself will take a long time to dissect fully and understand what it's telling us about the plumbing of the East Rift Zone. Then we had the 6.9 earthquake on the south flank, which moved the south flank a considerable amount, probably created some room in the volcano for magma to be stored, although that's a debatable question. The impact of that earthquake on the eruption in the Lower East Rift Zone and the summit is still open to some question. And then the draining of the summit lava lake following the eruption in the Lower East Rift Zone and the big earthquake, of course, put us on this course to what we have now, which are these repeated explosions of ash from the summit and an ongoing collapse event at the summit. What that collapse event is telling us about the summit magma reservoir geometry and how it behaves when you have a major withdrawal event. This is the first time we've watched something like that unfold with modern instruments, and I guess that's also true of the Lower East Rift Zone eruption too. The suite of tools we're bringing to this is really unprecedented at Kilauea, and the combination of what we're measuring with all these tools together will, I think, really improve our understanding of how magma moves, what's controlling the movement of magma, what feedback loop there is between earthquakes, such as the 6.9, and behavior of the rift zone, how the summit and the rift zone are connected, and all the factors that play into what style of eruption Kilauea will present us with.
At last Tuesday night's community meeting, Steve Brantley, who's your deputy scientist in charge, he spoke of what he had observed up at the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, which is on the rim of the caldera. There have been some really major significant changes that any of us will see once we are once again allowed into the park. Tell us what's going on up there.
The ongoing deflation of the summit and subsidence of the summit as magma is withdrawn into the volcano has caused the summit to begin to collapse, physically collapse. And so Halemaumau itself has gotten bigger. The walls have retreated. It's gotten deeper. The depth inferred from a recent survey, a photogrammetric survey, is more than a couple hundred meters. So it's quite deep. And outboard of Halemaumau, between Halemaumau and the caldera rim, there are subsidence cracks that are tens of feet high. And it's dramatically altered the landscape. We also know that the ground beneath HVO has been dropping and tilting, and that's what's caused our building to have some damage. So it's a dramatically different landscape up there when you're looking at the Halemaumau region. Now, elsewhere in the caldera, it still looks pretty much the same. And of course, that's one of the questions, is how broad an area will ultimately subside and collapse. I think on a personal note, it's difficult to be up there and see that. It's fascinating scientifically, but to see the building damaged is a little hard because of the long history of that place and the fact that that is our home base. And it's uncertain what the outcome of that will be.
I recently installed this very fascinating new app onto my iPhone, which is called Quake Feed. And for example, if one feels an earthquake here on the island, they can go to the USGS website and find out where it was and how big it was. But the Quake Feed app notifies me when there's an earthquake or something that feels like an earthquake to the seismographs that USGS has installed all over. And we're getting sometimes hundreds a day of these up at the volcano area. But I don't think they're standard earthquakes because they're not really felt all that far. But that's just my layman's interpretation. Tell us, Tina Neal, what are they as you know them now?
Well, you're right. They're not earthquakes in the classical sense that we're used to. They're, in my view, kind of a hybrid process that's creating a lot of ground shaking that is measured the same way we try to measure earthquakes, and that's why the numbers are coming out so high. There's a lot of energy being released into the ground, but it's a combination of an explosion process, which has something to do with a sudden release of pressure, we think, from the upper magma reservoir, and those explosions are moving a lot of earth. As you saw in the pictures of Halemaumau right now, the bottom is filled with rubble, and that rubble pile was probably many hundreds of meters thick. So this explosion process is pushing through that incredible pile of rock, and that's causing a lot of mechanical energy to be dissipated in the rock and causing a lot of ground shaking. At the same time, during these events, we know the ground moves, the whole upper caldera moves, because we see our tilt meters respond. And so the faults and the ground around Halemaumau are moving as well. I think all of these things are contributing to the ground shaking and to what we are measuring as a single earthquake. It's a complex hybrid process that we're still trying to understand.
I'd say you guys have about 150 or 200 years worth of study out of this one series of events that's going on. One of the things that I was fascinated by is that on a recent Hawaiian Volcano Observatory update, it was stated that the amount of magma coming out of Fissure 8 down in Leilani Estates area is 15 to 25 times the amount that was emanating out of Pu'u'o'o. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, what I like to say is that the current effusion rate, the amount of lava coming out of Fissure 8, as best we can estimate it from a variety of means, is about the same amount of lava that came out of Pu'u'o'o during those very high fountaining events. So during the maximum output phases of the Pu'u'o'o eruption, that is what we're seeing now approximately at Fissure 8.
Okay, so it's not quite as bad as I thought it was, because 15 to 25 times sounds kind of scary.
I think what they meant is it's 15 to 25 times the average rate over the 35 years. I think that's what they were meaning.
What else would you like to add, Tina Neal?
I think one of the things we're going to look back on this series of events is the number of new tools that we brought to the eruption response, and this is where we're going to develop this incredibly rich data set. It spans everything from the very simple and most reliable, which is human observation, and I like to point to the fact that Don Swanson goes up every morning to Volcano House and sits there for hours with a spotting scope to watch what's going on at Halemaumau, which is ironically just tens of yards away from the original volcano observatory site. So the power of human observation is being brought to these eruptions, but we are using space-based data regularly, radar data, to track the changes and to measure the change in the ground elevation and deformation, and that's been a very powerful technique. We are also using unmanned aerial vehicles, unmanned aerial systems, almost every day now.
And would that be drones?
That's another word for drones. And these are doing amazing things, and I think some of this is the first time this has been done here in the United States, if I'm not mistaken, including making gas emission measurements, both in the Lower East Rift Zone and at the summit, taking unbelievable imagery that we've seen. And from that imagery, they can derive a series of careful photogrammetric products that we can analyze to measure shape change and volume change. So the use of these unmanned aerial systems to track the lava flows and give real-time information to the emergency planners, that is phenomenal. We are also doing a variety of new gas measurements with a suite of new tools, some of which have been developed by USGS scientists, and deploying infrasound sensors. These are also coming into use now pretty regularly around the world, but these are things we're actually developing to be able to localize the source of seismic energy at the surface. And so right now, for instance, we have an array deployed in the Lower East Rift Zone that tells us what we know from observation, that Fissure 8 is where all of the action is. But the reason that's such a powerful tool and a great result is that if we were to have Mauna Loa erupt in the middle of the night and we weren't exactly sure where along the rift zone lava was coming out, this tool, infrasound, might be able to help us localize that eruption. So the proof of concept and the application of that technique is really successful and rewarding and helps us look ahead to the future. I also want to shout out to our technical crew, which in the middle of this crisis, even being kicked out of our home base, has been out there putting out new seismometers and new equipment to keep us ahead of things. When it looked like that intrusion had stopped around the PGV area, we were very concerned that it might propagate further east towards Kapoho, and we had to put out some additional instruments downrift to catch that, and they were able to do that in record time, and that was very impressive.
I just want to go back on one thing you said. You mentioned, should Mauna Loa erupt in the middle of the night, are you sensing that might be a possibility?
Thanks for that important follow-up. Right now, Mauna Loa is very quiet. We're seeing no evidence of any concerning activity, and we are still keeping an eye on it, even with all this distraction going on at Kilauea.
That was Tina Neal, scientist in charge from Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, and we have two additional conversations to share this morning, one with Lorna Yaita and Janet Coney of Kilauea Lodge about the history of the lodge, but also about how it's being impacted by this event, and with Emily Cady of Volcano Arts Center, which represents a number of local artists and has a facility inside the park, as well as one in Volcano Village. This is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. We're here on the radio on Hawaii Island Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM, or listen to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Let's get to our next conversation. One of the things I was curious about is what the business climate is like and what the environment is like in some of the places that are affected by this lava flow. I have two guests in the studio who can answer that relative to Volcano Village. Lorna Yaita is the longtime owner of Kilauea Lodge. Good morning. Aloha, Lorna.
Good morning. Aloha.
We're also joined by the general manager or the office manager of Kilauea Lodge, Janet Coney. Aloha, Janet.
Aloha, Sherry.
Lorna Yaita, when exactly did you and your husband, Albert, purchase Kilauea Lodge?
Albert and I bought the property, which was not a lodge at the time, in 1986 on our honeymoon.
Wow. Lorna, tell us what Kilauea Lodge is for those who may not have been to Kilauea Lodge up in Volcano Village.
Kilauea Lodge was built by the YMCA in 1937 as Hale O Aloha. And it was a place for children of Hawaii to come and experience a volcano, to learn about geology and volcanology and to hike the trails and to learn about the native forest and birds. It's a 10-acre parcel, and the kids had dormitory rooms and little cabins outside and catchment water and freezing showers because there was no heat for the showers. This camp ran through the 30s and 40s. Well, in the 40s, it was taken over by the military during the war as a radio school, but it opened up again after the war. So there are kids all the way through the later 40s and the 50s. The 1960 tsunami hit Hilo, and the downtown YMCA was destroyed. There was no insurance. So their board had to make a tough decision, which was to sell Haleo'aloha to pay for the construction of a new Y in town. After that, a young couple from Oahu bought it and ran it just as a restaurant, and they called it Volcano Lodge. But it was only a restaurant. It was only open for lunch.
Did the other rooms exist at the time?
Well, no. The dormitory was used as storage. And so when Albert and I bought it, we saw that it should be rooms. And we hired local architects to design a great design, I think, where there were interior bathrooms. And we popped up and had natural airflow. And those are very popular. They're smaller rooms, but they're very popular. And they're historic. It's a historic building. And then we added on another building with more rooms and bathrooms and common rooms.
Nice, nice. Talk about what you are seeing in Volcano Village these days. What's the impact, particularly from the summit explosions that are being talked about and the ash? Tell us about what the business environment is right now in Volcano Village and specifically at Kilauea Lodge.
Well, I would say about 2.5 weeks ago, there were times we'd walk into the dining room in the morning and there'd be four people all morning at breakfast. And maybe 10 people would trickle in for lunch, and then 17, I think, was our lowest number for dinner. And we had probably maybe four or five guest rooms from people who hadn't canceled. So we said, Janet and I said, we can't survive like this. Our employees aren't going to be able to get paychecks. They support families. You know, what are we going to do? So at that point in time, Janet, tell us about Allison Blair coming.
I got a call from Allison Blair from Hawaii News Now wanting to come over and do a piece on business and how businesses are being impacted by the news that the media is putting out there.
Not all the media. Some of the media.
That's true. That's absolutely true. But how some of the media has been blown out of proportion and how it was impacting businesses, especially in the Volcano Village area. So I agreed to meet with her. She flew over, did a wonderful piece on Volcano Village, focusing on some of the business, interviewing some of the business owners in the village. And it aired Memorial Weekend, which was a great boost for us.
Yeah, and she also interviewed employees at different businesses, at the galleries and several of the restaurants and several of the B&B owners. And she interviewed, which was taking it right into people's homes. While these are employees whose hours have been cut dramatically, you know, how are they going to live? And she ran these series over 3 days.
So how many employees does Kilauea Lodge have?
We have 25 full-time and 35 part-time?
Correct.
And so have you had to lay people off, or what's the status today? Because you mentioned Allison's piece was good for you. How was it good for you?
Local business, locals have come up to support Kilauea Lodge in a big, big way. I've had numerous phone calls where they have said that they've seen our piece and they just want to come up and support folks from Hilo, folks from Kona, wanting to come over and support Kilauea Lodge.
The first night after the pieces ran, the first Friday night after the pieces ran, we went to dinner at Ohelo Cafe, which is up the road, and we took Janet and John and Albert and I, the four of us went. And everyone in there saw us come in, and they were all thumbs up. The cooks were thumbs up. The people sitting in the restaurant were thumbs up. And then earlier, I had been in the lodge dining room, and the same thing. I saw people coming in, and they were all thumbsing up each other because they were here to support the business. And we had a fabulous weekend.
Well, you know, I think that people on this island particularly really do want to see all of our local businesses get through this, survive, so they can go back, and including Kilauea Lodge, that everybody can go back to thriving, because we've had a really good business climate in Volcano Village. You know, we've got not just Kilauea Lodge, but there's other restaurants and other places to stay, and we want those places to be there because eventually this volcanic eruption will die down and we will get back to a more normal state of affairs. So that's really good. So at this point, have you had to lay off employees?
We have laid off no one. We have cut hours, but we've laid off no one.
A lot of the businesses I know are really doing their best to not lay people off, even though I know there are some tour companies and some hotels that have had to lay people off just because of the unexpected downturn of business. That said, the Hawaii Island Visitor Bureau, Ross Burtis, said that visitor arrivals for May have been up 27%. May is normally sort of a slow month for tourism, but I think a lot of that uptick in business has to do with people staying in Hilo, the media, FEMA, some of the new first responders, the military, people that normally wouldn't be coming to Hilo.
Yes, a friend of mine is a bartender at the Nanailoa, and he said business is booming, and especially in the bar.
Oh, that would be journalists for you, I think. So, Janet, everybody is concerned about the air quality in Volcano Village because there have been sometimes frequent, sometimes not so frequent, gas and ash explosions at the summit. So what's going on inside the village?
You know, being just a mile outside of the national park, a lot of people don't understand or are not aware that, you know, we're actually in a great location. The trade winds blow when there is fog in the air, or when we've gotten these little ash eruptions, it's going south from us. It is going away. We've gotten a slight dusting of ash since this whole series started, but our air quality is very good. On our website, I have a link to the HVO air quality, and I do try to direct our guests to that site that are concerned, that say that they have breathing conditions or are worried. But majority of the time, our air quality is very good.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, Janet Babb, who's a geologist with Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, also lives in Volcano Village, and she has told me the same thing, that she has gotten light dustings of ash, but it's not what people might expect if they see those dramatic photos of the gas explosions at the summit. And the other thing I think that people from here understand this, but people from elsewhere don't, the fact that the Kilauea crater is huge, and even Hawaiian Volcano Observatory and the Jaguar Museum, located on the edge, is more than a half a mile from the central crater. I think it's closer to a mile. Doesn't seem that way, because when you look at it, it seems like it's close, but it's not that close. So being outside of the park, it's good to hear that things are going well at Kilauea Lodge and inside Volcano Village. What can you tell me about any other businesses inside Volcano Village? How are they doing? How are they faring? Do we know?
Well, the Volcano Art Center is having a struggle because their main gallery is located in the national park, and that is the source of primarily the income that supports all their programs. So they've moved their art, a lot of the art from the gallery, into the village to the Neil Lunny campus, and they're running all kinds of extra activities and things for visitors, because they realize that visitors don't have the park to rely on right now for their entertainment. And the Art Center has also stepped up and invited a group of business leaders and B&P owners, vacation rental people, to join in collaboration of how to promote Volcano Village. So this is ongoing. Jesse Tunison has designed a wonderful website, and this should be up and running pretty soon, available online to the public.
And what website is this? Is this for Volcano Village or Volcano Art Center?
This is for Volcano Village.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Volcano Village didn't, I guess, have a special website for its own before, huh?
No.
Oh, and Jesse does a really nice job.
Yes. So this is exciting. This is very exciting. I mean, it's something we should have done 15 years ago. But we're doing it now, and we had a big meeting the other day, and they will continue to meet a couple times a week as they work out the kinks, and they're working with HTA and Ross Birch and all kinds of resources out there.
I think that the message that local people need to really understand is it's very important for us right now to really support our local businesses. I mean, if you want to go out to dinner, go out to dinner. If you want to go to Kilauea Lodge, if you want to go to any place that is still functioning and doing business, do it, because we need to keep our local businesses thriving. Anything you'd like to say before we say aloha, Lorna Iaita?
No, just thank you, Sherry, for this opportunity, because, you know, we haven't had much of a voice. little community. We don't even have a big sign on the road saying that this is Volcano Village. And we haven't really had much of a voice. The reporters don't come up and talk to us. I mean, the mainland reporters. And so thank you for the opportunity to say some things.
Well, I just have to mention, full disclosure, I have stayed at Kilauea Lodge several times. The rooms are fabulous. I love it. And I really like the restaurant. You have good food. And you're open for lunch. You're open for dinner. And it's fun. So, Janet Coney, anything you'd like to say before we say aloha?
The website that Jesse has put together, it's experiencevolcano.com.
Nice.
So if anybody wants to go check that out. Thank you, Sherry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Take care. Aloha.
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 And now my final conversation with Emily Katie Weiss, who's the gallery manager at Volcano Arts Center. Aloha, Emily.
Aloha, Sherry.
I wanted to get a sense as to what's going on at Volcano Arts Center because, of course, your facility inside Hawaii Volcanoes National Park clearly is not accessible right now. And let's just start out with a brief description. What is Volcano Arts Center?
The Volcano Arts Center is a nonprofit art and education organization. We were established in 1974, so this is not the first time that we have witnessed as an organization changes in our landscape due to the Kilauea volcano eruption. However, this one is a little different in the fact that it has been so much activity down in the lower East Rift Zone and at the summit. So we have definitely changed our operations somewhat. We have always been very blessed by a home in Volcanoes National Park in the 1877 Volcano House Hotel building, which is now closed due to the park closure. So we have temporarily moved our gallery, kind of our showroom, where we show the works of about 230 island artists. And we've moved a lot of the artwork that we normally show in that gallery building over to our education campus, which is located in Volcano Village, just outside the National Park entrance. We're very blessed that during this transitional time, we still have a home, although it's not the home that we are usually used to being in.
I know that people who go to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park generally see Volcano Arts Center, even if they don't go inside. I'm always particularly intrigued by your building because I think, Emily, you know, I have a photo of my grandmother and great aunt in front of that building from a visit they made here in 1908. And it is a really historic building. And now I'm wondering, do you know what kind of damage, if any, it has sustained from the 6.9 earthquake and even from the constant shaking that has gone on in the last month?
We have been blessed in the fact that we have seen no visible damage to the building itself. Of course, we haven't done full assessments. The Park Service will do that before we're, you know, able to occupy the space again. However, we have been in the building. We have received no damages to any artwork, which has been quite amazing, considering, you know, the glass and the ceramics and the quantity of artworks that we do display there. So far, no damages to report, which is kind of amazing, but at the same time, we're so happy to be able to report that. And we haven't done any of the real heavy evaluations under the building to make sure, but that building's been through a lot in its history, and we always like to say, you know, that building just kind of rolls with the punches and still stands. So we're hoping that that's the case after this is all over too.
Well, that's a good thing. Now, Volcano Arts Center inside the park has always offered a lot of activities, as has your Neolani campus. So give us a sense as to what is going on at the Neolani campus, whether people who go to Volcano Village will find some of those same events, activities, workshops, classes, as well as some of the artwork. Just tell us more about what's happening in your Volcano Village location.
Yes, this has been one of the challenges that we've been faced with in the closure of the park. We do hold a lot of different events and programs, both in the park and at our campus. So in the past month, we have been combining all of those activities into one location, which has been a logistical challenge. However, we are trying to keep the programs running as best we can. We honestly feel that we have a responsibility to our community to keep things moving, and you know, the fact that we do have a second location where many others don't, we feel that the most activities that we can continue to offer and art sales, you know, one of the things we noticed right away was that just the visitor industry kind of dropped out. So it was real important to let people know that Volcano Village is still open, and our location there, our art center within that community, is trying to hold all these different classes and the few spaces we have there. One that has been continuing to run is our Aloha Friday program. Every Friday at 11, different hula arts-related activities, lay making, ukulele lessons, hula instruction, and they're free to the community. So especially for those people that are displaced and just need to get their minds off of things, this is when the arts really become important in our community in keeping, you know, people entertained and happy. And one thing we've noticed is our artists have, because we're in the national park, you know, we've been showing these volcanic scenes and these volcanic objects for so long just because it's part of our environment that we deal with every day. So it's nothing new for our artists to be representing these types of events. We just happen to be kind of on the forefront of what can happen, and we want people to keep aware that although there's some people that are just being so affected by it, but there's many others that this is going to affect a little differently. And we just want to make sure that however the arts can help support this community at this time, that we're there for them.
As Tina Neal explained to us in an earlier discussion on this program, the, quote, earthquakes that are happening at the summit area aren't officially earthquakes. They're really more of a settling of the earth and the rocks inside the caldera sort of crashing together. Are you at Volcano Arts Center inside your Volcano Village Neolani campus, are you feeling much disruption from the earth movements there? Is that causing any problem for you or your visitors?
It's definitely a little disturbing to folks. Some people handle it better than others, I've noticed. We are definitely feeling them daily and sometimes multiples daily. You just kind of have to settle yourself down after those events. There's no avoiding it when it's happening. We're blessed by the beauty that we get to experience every day. We have a beautiful forest trail that is just a little respite from everything else, and people are taking advantage of that. People are coming, and especially our local community, you know, they want to support however they can, and every dollar spent in the community right now is so important. So I think people are really wanting to support, and they want to keep our economy strong. So that's been a really nice thing to witness. I would like to just acknowledge Tina Neal and her team of scientists at the observatory. They have done a tremendous job of getting us really accurate and timely information. I know those guys are working with very little sleep and around the clock, and her team has just, kudos to them, and to really making the community aware and be really safe about it. The park closure is unfortunate and it's an inconvenience for us, but we're safe, you know, and that's what's most important. And visitors are safe, and that's, I really can't even begin to explain how, you know, the information that they're giving us is so comforting.
Volcano Arts Center's Neolani campus often does music events, jazz in the forest, things like that. I've seen Maggie Heron there. Are you continuing with those kind of music events as well?
We are hoping to continue all of our programs. The best place to check on a daily basis is our website, and that's volcanoartcenter.org. As an art center, we want to be responsible for and a part of creating an environment where our community feels good and feels happy and feels safe, either looking at artwork or participating in classes and programs that can get their minds off of other dilemmas. So the arts and the entertainment are definitely something that we want to continue. So we are trying to hold every program we can. The website's the best place to get the most accurate, and you can always call 808-967-8222. Because our gallery location, which we use as a showroom, is off limits, we've started a series of online auctions. The next one to go live is the work of John Dawson. You know, he's well loved on this island. We're really trying to be creative in the ways that we're sharing our art right now, too.
Emily Cady, I so appreciate your taking the time to talk with us. Aloha.
Thank you, Sherry. Aloha to you.
And with that, we're going to say aloha for today. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken, your host and producer. You may listen to Island Issues as podcasts at lava1053.com or at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Until next Sunday morning and another Island Issues, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@lava105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.